Well, hi everybody. We are continuing with our old commentary perspectives. Today is the 17th of May. We're working in that period between Waisak and the Festival of Goodwill. Always in Waisak, we hope that there will be an effulgence of light available. It is the most luminous time of the year. We're working in that part of the old commentary that deals with the law of repulse, which is the fourth law of the soul, entailing the use of the first ray and descending from the spiritual triad over the antarkarana, and making it possible for the disciple to release his attachment to all kinds of preoccupations and attractions in the outer world which do not serve his soul development. So often he has to detach from things that he greatly prefers to do, only to discover that these, or especially the way that he had been performing them, have been limitations upon him. And later, when the soul begins to speak after a destructive period, all that has been lost is restored. So we have finished, well, we can't use the word finished, can we? We have at least offered some commentary on the first four of the directions of the rays, the first four sections of the law of repulse, and now we're going to focus on the direction of ray five. The conference that we were we've just completed in the United States was a ray five conference that had much to do with the relationship between the fifth ray and the solar angel and the development of light within the human consciousness. So now we will see what those upon the fifth ray in their soul have to deal with when they are to detach themselves from their former preoccupations, which were serving as limitations. So I'll read this first, and then when we're finished with our discussion, I'll read it again and see if we can have, or if we have acquired, a deeper understanding. Deep in a pyramid, on all sides built around by stone, in the deep dark of that stupendous place, a mind and brain embodied in a man were working. Outside the pyramid, the world of God established itself. The sky was blue, the winds blew free, the trees and flowers opened themselves unto the sun. But in the pyramid, down in its dim laboratory, a worker stood, toiling at work. His test tubes and his frail appliances he used with skill. In rows and rows, the retorts for fusing and for blending, for crystallizing and for that which sought division, stood with their flaming fires. The heat was great, the toil severe. Dim passages in steady progress led upward to the summit. There a wide window stood, open unto the blue of heaven, and carrying one clear ray down to the worker in the depths. He worked and toiled. He struggled onwards towards his dream, the vision of an ultimate discovery. He sometimes found the thing he sought and sometimes failed, but never found that which could give to him the key to all the rest. In deep despair he cried aloud unto the God he had forgot, "Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key." Then silence reigned. Through the opening on the summit of the pyramid, dropped from the blue of heaven, a key came down. It landed at the feet of the discouraged worker. The key was of pure gold, the shaft of light. Upon the key a label, and writ in blue these words: "Destroy that which thou hast built, and build anew. But only build when thou hast climbed the upward way, traversed the gallery of tribulation, and entered into light within the chamber of the King. Build from the heights, and thus shew forth the value of the depths." The worker then destroyed the objects of his previous toil, sparing three treasures which he knew were good, and upon which the light could shine. He struggled towards the chamber of the King, and still he struggles. We see the particular stage of evolution in which these laws, this law particularly, is to be applied. It is a stage before the third initiation. It is a stage before the individual has been successful in focusing the consciousness permanently within the causal body at will. It is a stage beyond that of the first reversal of the wheel, when the man simply begins to reorient himself and reach towards higher things, because some influence from the spiritual triad is needed in these laws of the soul, especially the law of repulse, the law of group progress, the law of expansive response, and the law of the lower four. Earlier than that, for the first three laws of the soul, the energy of the ego is sufficient, but then the man has to be able to achieve or receive in a directed manner this energy from the ego. Deep in a pyramid, the pyramid is the symbol of initiation. It is also a five-sided figure. It's correlated with the mind, and eventually with the elevation of the mind in the initiation process. So the pyramids were, in a way, temples of initiation, it is suggested. They existed in Egypt not just a few thousand years ago, but according to HBB and others, 60, 70, 80,000 years ago, maybe before that. The elevated point in the pyramid stands for the synthesis above the four lower sections of the personality, the elemental nature. We can consider the base of the pyramid as the fourfold elemental: mind, emotions, body, and the personality as a whole, the square of personality. And the elevation can be considered as the higher mind, or the elevated point is the higher mind, or the ego, the true ego, well, the almost true ego, on the higher mental plane. The spiritual triad, we are told by the Tibetan, is the true ego, and in another sense, we can even use that word ego with a capital E-G-O, to represent the monad itself within the monadic egg. But here the pyramid represents, I think, mental inquiry. It represents the mental approach to all of creation. And the worker, that is the term used for the fifth ray soul in this case, is buried deep in the pyramid, and so in a way he has lost contact with the natural beauty of life and life as it is being lived outside the pyramid. On all sides, built around by stone, there is a particular connection between the fifth ray types and the mineral kingdom. And a number of these fifth ray types, it seems, are on our planet as what's called primary lotuses, who have the first and third petal of the egoic lotus fairly well unfolded, but not the second. They have to learn the love nature. They come from another planet, not all of them necessarily, of course, but some do, and that planet may be considered to be Vulcan. Mercury is another possibility, but Mercury is less associated with the mineral kingdom than Vulcan, which is very much associated with all that is hard and crystalline and in a precipitated state. So they are working very much with the mineral kingdom. So many fifth ray types do, not exclusively, because some are working with the vegetable or animal kingdoms, of course, but they make a particular study of the lower three kingdoms. The fifth ray study of man, perhaps, is, except in the medical field, is still lagging behind. The psychological field will one day open to that type of study. And as far as the study of man as a soul, for which the fifth ray would be eminently suitable, this has to await further developments. People like Leadbeater and Besant, they did study man in this way, and the Tibetan is telling us about the causal nature of man, and he's using, I think, the fifth ray to do so. At least it's a fifth ray subject. There are many particulars involved in the causal nature of man on the higher mental plane, but mostly the fifth ray is applied these days to the lower kingdoms, with special advances in the field of physics and chemistry, which concern the very lowest kingdom, the mineral kingdom. So this study represented by the pyramid is circumscribed largely by the mineral kingdom. And it represents the obduracy of the barriers which separate the inquiring mind from learning more about the outside world in a more natural and living way. It is dark there. There is a darkened chamber in the fourth law of repulse. There is a room where the weaver is surrounded by folds and folds of woven goods, and no light can enter. There's always this darkened chamber of the personal inquiry, the personal consciousness. It is so for the second ray type as well, where he burrows like a mole and finds his way into the darkness and arrives at knowledge of the world of natural things. So we always begin within the personal consciousness, and this pyramid can be considered to be the mental personal consciousness of the inquiring, experimenting fifth ray type, again, whose eyes are open to the world immediately under his inquiry. In other words, he is in the hall of ignorance, and he can learn a great deal about the revelation of the senses, but he cannot yet learn about the subtle things. So he is in a deep, dark condition. And the stupendous place tells us something about the capacities of the mind, how much elevation is needed to reach the top of the pyramid. One has to work one's way up towards the light in this great cavernous place, step by step. The mind is a very useful instrument, but in a way much slower than the intuition, so there will be many sequential steps which have to be taken in the half-light, in the darkness of that stupendous place. He is a mental type of human being. He is perhaps not yet the full man. We know about those people from Vulcan that they are missing something when it comes to the astral, emotional, magnetic love response. This they've come to Earth to learn. And so it is with many fifth-ray types. They are well at home with the mind and the activation of the brain. But in terms of being a full human being, they still have quite a bit of rounding out to do. So this particular description of the worker emphasizes his mental qualities and does not speak of his vital or emotional qualities, which later in the stanza he seems to reacquire, or at least they are evoked from him due to his mental frustration at being able to proceed no further. So some of these types of human beings are a bit awkward. They have everything they need mentally, but in order to be more natural with life, they will have to round themselves out. They are largely a mind and a brain. And that is the part of the human nature which is emphasized. And they are working. They are some of the great workers. I'm remembering pictures of Thomas Edison and descriptions of how he worked. He seems obviously to have been a fifth-ray soul. He was working on the phonograph, and we see a picture of him after five consecutive all-nighters. He did have a place to nap. Was it Menlo Park in New Jersey, where his laboratory was? He had a place under the stairs to take a nap. And he would recharge himself in that way, but worked continuously. So the description worker is very suitable to the type of individual we are describing. A mental, practical, manual worker serving a spirit of inquiry, of curiosity, working with the mind, working within matter as we know it, particularly working in the solar worlds, in the lunar worlds at this time, particularly later other types of work will be possible to those who seek to investigate the soul. Outside his specific area of interest, because they do narrow down their inquiry and shut out all other things so they can bring their formidable power of concentration to bear upon the particular subject which is to be illuminated. Outside the pyramid, outside this specialization often aimed at the understanding the mineral kingdom through physics and chemistry, the world of God established itself. A much more complete world was out there. Now remember, this is the God that this worker has forgotten. As he works, he is captivated by the garment of the Lord, the garment of God, and he forgets the God who is behind the garment. This is often the case with the materially minded, skeptical fifth-ray soul worker, and true of some fifth-ray personalities as well, but these laws of the soul are meant especially for those whose soul is upon the particular ray being discussed. So the world of God, much more complete, much more natural, much more beautiful, is all around him, but he just doesn't notice it. He's so concentrated upon his particular labor. These are all the natural and beautiful things. The sky was blue. Now, of course, blue is going to suggest the intuition, the second ray, synthesis, the higher mental plane, heaven, that which can come from heaven in terms of revelation, well, right now he's not concerned about that. He thinks he can do it quite himself. In this way, he's very much like the first-rate type in terms of independence. The first-rate type will take many things unto himself and think that he does not need assistance. So it is here with the fifth-rate type, though they do tend to work in teams. And this is very useful for the objectivity of science. Anyway, outside the pyramid, outside his specialization, outside his particular mental focus and interest, the sky was blue, the winds blew free, the Spirit of God is like the wind, it bloweth where it listeth, and no one knows the source or the destination. I roughly paraphrase here. The winds blew free, and he is in a state of complete rigor and concentration, whereas there's this great sense of spontaneity and freedom with the winds, and the winds also suggest the Buddhic plane, the plane of air, where ideas can be found and where the inspiration can freely enter spontaneously, suddenly. The trees and flowers open themselves unto the sun. We are here in the vegetable kingdom, which sometimes is an object of study for the fifth ray, but in the way it's being represented here, the man is working very much in the lowest level in the mineral kingdom, and so the living entities and their life processes and all the beauty of that and the natural unfoldment of that is not noticed. The living things open themselves unto the sun, the natural sun, or also the sun represented as the soul, or representing the soul. This is a source from the higher mental plane and beyond, with which the ordinary fifth-ray worker has naught to do. So, in many ways, it's an unnatural life in pursuit of the revelation of some hidden mystery concerning the functioning of the garment of God. Not God yet, although one day I think the fifth-ray workers will explore what energy really is and will give a new definition, operative definition, to the usually religiously used term, God. So, God is forgotten, the life of God is forgotten, none of this is heeded, and he is separated from the sun of life. He's down in the deep darkness of that stupendous place, separated from all that represents the true source of life, from his own higher ego and from the planetary logos and from the solar logos, all that the sun symbolizes. So here is the life of God, beautiful, outside the particular area of specialized interest, but in the pyramid, down in its dim laboratory, not much light is reaching this working area, and it is not the light of the higher worlds particularly, but whatever light can be found within matter itself. A worker stood. He's not sitting. Interesting. Sometimes we read of the third ray, the sitting weaver, at least he's sitting in the law of repulse stanzas, that a certain type on this ray can be quite idle and regardless of appearance. This is not the case with the fifth ray worker. He may be quite regardless of appearance, but he's certainly not idle, and he's standing, and he is highly stimulated by the will to inquire. One of the important instincts, the instinct of inquiry, and the will to do so, to persist with it. So in the half light, way, way down in the pyramid, before any type of ascent within the pyramid occurs, a worker is standing, and he's working very hard. He's toiling at work with that incredible persistence which the fifth ray, driven by the first ray, into which it eventually resolves, I lost my way there. Don't make sentences too complex, you know. But anyway, this worker is driven by the first ray, persistently at work. And it's not easy work, it's hard work, it's sweaty work, it's concentrated work, and his environment is not too pleasant, really. He has some particular instruments of work. We're used to this in the laboratories, the idea of test tubes where we isolate certain types of materials that we want to perhaps mix or study. His test tubes and his frail appliances. DK is using that word frail from the soul perspective. It may not seem frail to the worker, but when compared with the type of energy which is released in the higher worlds, these instruments appear weak and very shatterable and unable to contain the kinds of energies which could be released from the higher worlds. But in terms of dealing with the realm of fire by friction, in which he is primarily working, perhaps they will serve their useful purpose. He is in a laboratory, well organized. The power of organization does belong to the fifth ray type. Even the glamour of organization is connected, interestingly, with the fifth ray type. So in all of these organized rows, he has these flasks or retorts, special type of laboratory vessels for various purposes of his work within the field of matter, for fusing. One of the acts he does is to fuse the different elements and substances and to blend them together, to mix them together. Crystallization is an important part of the chemical process, to take a substance from a rather liquidic state and bring it into a solid state, perhaps through reduction of temperature or perhaps through the introduction of a certain type of crystal in a supersaturated solution. Precipitation. He seeks to achieve the solid state of certain substances. This is the crystallized state. And the retorts are also used for analysis to divide one thing from another. These are very common chemical operations, and it reminds us of the modern chem laboratory through which I suppose a number of us have passed as we were studying the different substances and their interactions. But these retorts are being heated by the flaming fires, because we need fire. Fire by friction in this case, oftentimes intense heat, to bring about the type of operations in which he is engaged. We know how often in the chem lab we used the Bunsen burner, as it was called, and it was necessary to heat things to quite a high temperature to get the kinds of reactions we were looking for. So he has his own procedures, and they are very mechanical. They involve material substance. They involve fire. They involve a certain type of laboratory apparatus, which he is skilled in using, because this is, after all, a ray of practical intelligence. And he's down there almost as if he's in the bowels of the earth. It's a very hot atmosphere. We know as we go deeper into the earth, the temperature increases. Well, in this pyramid, it's the same. And he's used to working under these very stressful, heated conditions. And there's no let up in his very, very hard work, which here we call toil. So we get quite a good picture of this mind and brain embodied in a man seeking something which is hidden, and using very material means to arrive at this something for which he is seeking. It is a strictly material method at this point, and it tends to isolate him from what might be called the usual joys of life and the aesthetic appreciations and exposure to the beauty of life and the freedom of life. He has confined himself rigorously to a kind of mental dungeon in which he hopes to find the secrets which lie behind the construction of the garment of God. Now, so we're way down in the pyramid, down in the STEM laboratory, but now the old commentary talks about what may lie at the heights of the pyramid. I suppose that it would be important here to be studying the Egyptian pyramids and the different types of rooms and passages that they had, and I think reference is made here. I'm not any kind of expert on the structure of those pyramids, but we know there is the queen's chamber and the king's chamber and various kinds of passages, and perhaps the gallery of tribulation where the candidate for initiation is tested. That is probably a part of the pyramid structure as well, with the pyramid representing an initiatory temple. So there are ways to proceed upward, but they, again, are poorly lit. And we know that the fifth ray lord in Shambhala, and the fifth ray lord as Venus, these lords are among the most luminous of all the ray lords. Certainly for the Earth, Venus is the most luminous planet and the most unfolded planet, if not the most spiritually mature in our solar system. So in the half-light, passages do lead up gradually towards the summit of the pyramid, the capstone, where we can hope some sort of access to divinity will be found. Notice this is not rushing from point to point as the third ray type would tend to do. Rush not from point to point, nor be deluded by the outer forms and that which disappears. No, this is gradualism, very much like the seventh ray in that respect. There is a quality of the fifth ray which we can call linearity. And the progress undertaken by the fifth ray is very methodical, sequential, step by step, and linear. So we have the, I suppose, kinds of stairways leading upward in the half-light, steadily, step by step, and these will lead to the summit of the pyramid where, I suppose, we know, that a higher type of energy awaits. Does the fifth ray individual at this stage of his development yet know that? Probably not. But we are being given the perspective of someone here who really knows the structure of the pyramid, whereas this may not be the case for the worker toiling at his work. Upon the summit of the pyramid, there is a wide window. It's not these narrow, specific, extremely circumscribed pursuits, which of course can lead, can reveal great things, but it is wide to a larger world. And it's open unto the blue of heaven. Now, in heaven, everything is known. Down in the dim laboratory, very little is known, and the urge to know is laboriously pursued. But the blue of heaven suggesting the great second aspect, also suggesting the higher mental plane, one of the colors of which is blue. Every plane above a certain point is a kind of a heaven. We might call the higher mental plane a third heaven. We might call the Buddhic plane a fourth heaven, Atmic plane a fifth, Monadic plane a sixth heaven, and finally seventh heaven, which has made itself into the popular mind as a state of ecstasy and bliss, is the sea of fire, from this way of thinking, the sea of fire, the logoic plane. As stated, St. Paul the Tibetan tells us, was commenting on the seventh heaven as it was reflected in the third, and his words met with no comprehension at all, and then were mistranslated. So thus is the case when the initiate seeks to reveal certain realizations to the unprepared mind, and then the unprepared mind creates these scriptures to which everyone adheres, and thus their understanding, the understanding of the adherents, is necessarily circumscribed from the ignorance, as a result of the ignorance of those who created certain scriptures. Scriptures simply means that which is written down. So this wide window through which revelation can come is open to the greater content of knowledge that is resident in the blue of heaven, bringing in this great inclusive ray of love, wisdom. And through that window, at least, one clear ray, penetrating all of the dimness and the darkness, comes down to the worker in the depths. So he is receiving at least some inspiration from above, and there is clarity in this ray. So something is prompting him which will help him recognize when his discoveries are true and accurate and when he is following a false lead and is in the midst of wrong conclusions. He is influenced from heaven, but it's just a single ray, enough to keep him going, enough to prompt him forward, to be used as a touchstone of truth in relation to that which he may discover below. So here we have the heavens and the depths, and we see how deeply buried in the pyramid this worker really is. We all begin in a state of buriedness, subject to matter. The scholar is buried like a mole in the earth, in the lower inquiries. The weaver is buried or by folds and folds of woven goods, which he has woven. It's kind of a self-burial there, isn't it? He's created his own prison. And the fourth ray type is in the darkened chamber of self-interest, and all of the beauty he contacts reaching out of that chamber is distorted or refracted towards self-interest. And here we have, down in the depths, this worker very, very far from the blue heaven and the ray of blue heaven which is streaming through the window. And the window is a symbol of mediated knowing. When there is no window, you can know directly. When there is a window, even if it is very, very clear, you know about reality through the mind, and reality is mediated through the mind and is not direct knowledge such as there would be without a window. Okay, so he worked and toiled. He knows great work, and I think maybe some people who are married to scientists know that they maybe spend a lot more time in the laboratory or in their working place than they do with the spouse, because this is their, we'd say, consuming specific interest. He's struggling, and this is interestingly a quality of the fifth ray here. The word struggle is much used. He's struggling towards the light. He does have a dream, as we all do. Everybody has an astral body. Everybody can formulate wishes and visions which seem desirable, and his wish or dream, his vision, is of an ultimate discovery. There's so much to be known, he says. We know so little about this specific area. Now, there are temporary discoveries, there are useful discoveries, there are discoveries which cover a small field or range of applicability, and then there might be something true for all time, a general principle. We might say that when the great formulas of truth are revealed, they may cover many specific instances. I suppose with Einstein, if he was in the basically a third-rate type, certainly monadically he was, maybe as a soul philosopher he was, but he was in the fifth sub-ashram, I would say, of that particular ray. And his discovery was much more of an ultimate discovery than many of the lesser discoveries. It was a great principle, you might say. An ultimate discovery is often of a principle which has wide application in many specific instances. So this is not a cakewalk. This is not an easy stroll. This is intensely laborious in the heat and almost demanding an unnatural life. People who like relaxation and enjoyment and who simply want to live a more natural life, they're not going to accomplish in the way that this individual has is undertaking accomplishment. Of course, even the great scientists, if they are wise and have some other rays going on in there, they know that the mechanism does need a little bit of relief. I'm thinking about Richard Feynman, who was certainly a very humorous man as well as a great scientist, and he seemed to know also how to live life in a wider way. And perhaps that was his sort of fourth ray mercurial connection with people interested in physics, but who had not the credentials to understand it in a deeper way. He could communicate something to them. He had a connection with living which was quite natural in a way, it seemed, even though he could be intensely applied in his own field. So anyway, struggling onward, and an ultimate principle of discovery is his goal, this is his dream. How narrow is it? Well, I suppose it all depends on the nature of the particular scientific quest involved. He sometimes found the thing he sought, if it was not an ultimate thing, let us say. He found something useful, and sometimes he failed. The trial and error method is particularly the way for the fifth ray, and when errors come up and failures, it redirects the quest in a still more intelligent way, likely to succeed, and eventually there is success. But one thing he never found that which could give to him the key to all the rest. Kind of reminds one of the search these days for what's called the God particle, as if it would somehow reveal the method of God's creation. There are certain types of discovery which I think are wisely withheld from humanity, and it is possible for the higher powers to deflect the inquiring minds of even brilliant fifth-rate teams. We are told that in the Second World War, the inquiring minds of those who served the Black Lodge were deflected from discovery, and this may have been something that the Lords of Liberation were involved in, some of the great shambolic lives. And at the same time, the discovery was promoted by those, in the case of those who served the White Lodge. So he cannot find this open sesame to all knowledge. When certain scientists look at the condition of matter and all of the elemental structure and interactions, they think there could be something discovered that would give the key to how every type of element was formed. I'm recalling something from HPB where the quest was for something called protyle, which was a fundamental state of matter energy which could evolve into all other specific states. So he's looking for something which will solve the whole mystery of matter, and all of these temporary little discoveries along the way are useful, but do not satisfy the deep-seated dream that somehow there is a type of knowledge which can solve the mystery of all material interactions. Well, the fifth-ray type has emotions too, no doubt, and a great frustration descends upon him. In deep despair, he cried aloud. This is an astral reaction. The cry is always coming from the astral body. He cried aloud, in fact, not just keeping it into his own mind, but he expresses himself uncharacteristically in a declarative manner. Usually there's a lot of introversion with the fifth-ray types as they are so concentrated on what they're doing. In deep despair, he cried aloud unto the God he had forgot. He had become preoccupied with the garment of God and had negated the idea, debunked the idea, that any true mystery existed behind and within the mysteries of form which he was studying. But finally, he realizes he's at a dead end. He can go no further, and he cries aloud unto the God he had forgot, give me the key. The symbol of the key is so much fit with the fifth ray, the key of knowledge, that which applied will open the door of understanding and involvement with energies which hitherto had been sealed. Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. He had been working by himself or in teams, but completely ignoring the possibility that there is a type of higher knowledge, even now operative, a higher knowledge which he does not have, and which can be accessed with a little bit of humility. But you know how it is, there's a certain mental pride that goes along with this skeptical denial of the subtle states of matter and energy. So often, because a thing cannot be demonstrably proved, the fifth-ray type will reject it entirely and not give it the chance of possibly being real. There's a certain pride in that, and now humility is required and the upreaching hand or the upreaching mind to contact some higher agency which can do some good for his inquiries in the lower worlds. Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. The demand comes from the frustrated disciple for some kind of divine intervention, but it's frequently followed by silence. We're going to read in the sixth ray that shall I break my tunnel down? How can I find a way? The follower will ask, and no answer came. But then some action comes from the environment, which is, in a way, the answer to the invocation. So silence reigned after this demand, and in the silence there is revelation. We know that when we're finally reduced to silence, whether out of frustration or despair or just simply as a technique, something that we did not register before can be registered and a new development can occur because we are no longer deflecting revelation through noise. Give me the key. I alone can do no more good, so I'm willing to cooperate vertically. Now, you know, cooperating horizontally is no problem. The scientists do work in teams, they do very well. But to cooperate vertically and to admit the possibility of a higher source of knowledge from which influx can be had, this is a bit of a leap of faith for this very rational type. And they don't tend to do it. But increasingly, of course, there are scientists who do, let's say, believe in God, believe in higher powers, as they used to in older days, To be a scientist and to believe in God were not contradictory in older days. Today they often are, but not in all cases, and increasingly it will be the case that as energy is studied, it will be equated with the God of religion. So anyway, a revelatory silence reigned. Now we go on, and an answer is coming to this invocation. Through the opening on the summit of the pyramid, because indeed that pyramid does connect with the higher sources and you need an opening for reception, dropped from the blue of heaven where all knowledge is found, dropped, let us say, from the soul. Let us say it is from the soul, soul or angel, which, with respect to the man in the deep in the pyramid, has omniscience. It knows already that for which its extension, its personality, is seeking. A key came down, a type of understanding which will bring the man closer to his ultimate dream, the true key to all the rest, the true key to the secret of matter, the true key to the transformation between the garment of God and God himself, or between God and the garment of God. There is a way when being descends to manifest, there is a reason that it can, and there is a method, a modus operandi by which being becomes creation, becomes the web of forms which is created in this world. And this key, perhaps, is the beginning of the revelation of that interaction between the Creator and the garment the Creator wears, or the garment the Creator has become. It landed at the feet of the discouraged worker. This is interesting because it means he has to stoop down to get it. An act of humility is needed. It doesn't just land in his hand and the doorway to which it has to be applied appear. So he has to start from the bottom. He has to stoop, he has to kneel to pick up the key. The key was of pure gold. Well, we are reminded here of unalloyed wisdom, the gold of wisdom. Gold is a metal of great value, and it is associated with the higher self and with selfhood in general, and with the sun, which is the symbol of illumination, of wisdom, and of pure being and selfhood. So the gold here is not the gold of exchange, money and so forth. It is the gold which represents the higher values and perspective. The shaft of the key was of light, and this is, in the case of the fifth ray, a search for light. He wants to be able to look out upon an inner world of light divine. Unconsciously, something in him knows this. Consciously, he doesn't yet know it. So the shaft of the key suggests the pursuit of light and the possibility of revealing an ever greater light which will banish the dimness in which he lives down in the pyramid. The key had a label which described its purpose. Upon the key a label, and writ in blue as if with the signature of heaven, the authority of heaven behind it, the authority of the soul, the authority of the higher beings who are characterized by blue, and by the wisdom of blue, these are the words. Destroy that which thou hast built. Really should be a T, shouldn't it? Which thou hast built, and build anew. So he's getting the same advice as the Creator. Create again, my child, and build and paint and blend the tones of beauty, but this time for the world and not thyself. He's being told the same thing. Do it again. Weave a new carpet, but weave in the light of day as you see the plan. It is the assumption of a new creative act after the old form of action or creativity has shown its limitations. So destroy that which thou hast built and build anew. The third ray type is told to destroy the carpet. The sixth ray type is told to break down his tunnel. For the seventh ray type, the destruction comes anyway because the arch is tottering overhead, and if he stays there, he'll be crushed. So, and the wind of God takes care of the destruction itself. So, in the first ray stanza, he doesn't have to destroy anything. It's taken care of for him. Destroy that which thou hast built, and build anew. But there are conditions of consciousness, and conditions which must be fulfilled by a new type of labor, the labor of ascent, not just the labor of staying down in the world of limited cognition, using only the concrete mind. Ascent is required, but only build when thou hast climbed the upward way, through the many passages up towards the summit of the pyramid. Remember, he's being inspired from the summit, but he doesn't really know what the summit offers. He doesn't really know even that it exists and opens wide to the blue of heaven. He doesn't know that yet. But build only when thou hast, or after thou hast climbed the upward way, so aspired to raise the quality of your mind towards the sun of mind and the abstract mind and the intuitive mind, bring in the higher aspects of mind and make an effort towards spiritualization, which skeptically you used to refuse. Put that aside in all humility and actually climb the upward way. Make an effort to ascend along a path which hitherto you considered to be folly and delusion. Traversed the gallery of tribulation. I suspect the gallery of tribulation is actually a part of the structure of the Egyptian pyramid and has something to do with where a man is tested by all kinds of inimical forces. You know, there, I wonder, in the old days they say they were tested by crocodiles, and unless they had their Ajna center activated so they could actually see in all of this danger, they would fall victim to the crocodiles. Well, I'm not sure that's what it means here, but he has to pass through suffering and test, and the administrators, or those who administered the mysteries, they were active here in providing the tests for the ascending candidate. So he has to go through the pains of life, keeping the illumination of the soul steadily in his consciousness, and react in the right way to all the trials and tests to which he will be subjected. You have to go across the burning ground, go across that area of suffering to which every would-be initiate seeking detachment from the lower worlds will be subjected, and finally entered into light within the chamber of the king. And I'm presuming that the chamber of the king is the chamber of the soul. I cannot think yet that it will be the chamber of the monad. We're not there yet. But, you know, the kingly science of the soul is what Raja Yoga is. And the chamber of the king, I think in this case, would be the causal body, with the true king, the monad, having its projection in that chamber as the jewel in the lotus. So it is a kind of a room or a vessel in which the monad's influence reigns supreme, and which is the true chamber of temporary salvation for the ascending soul in incarnation. So don't build until you have the kind of perspective that you can gain from actually aspiring and climbing, undergoing the tests successfully. And there are, you know, so many of these tests which have to be met in a spiritual way, preserving soul values, and finally entered into soul light within the causal body, where which is characterized by the blue of heaven, and which in which an entirely different type of knowledge will be acquired. the idea of not building from below through induction, but building from a much greater vision is required, and then the depths will be seen in the light of the higher perspective, and their real value will be understood. Things in the lower worlds have no real meaning unless they can be related to patterns which are resident within the higher world. So these higher perspectives and the patterns they reveal show the place of all the lesser things within the patterns. It's kind of interesting, then draw a line from that which is without to that which is within and see the plan take form. The seventh ray is given some kind of similar injunction. The seventh ray cannot leave the pentagram, has to stand steady in the midst. That pentagram, of course, is the soul consciousness. Then a line has to be drawn from the lower world objects and patterns back into the pentagram where the disciple is standing, within soul consciousness. So anyway, we have humility, soul value, intensification of the light, instructions for purpose, the value of the blue of heaven, the need to destroy and rebuild, but only after aspiration, testing, and further illumination is achieved, then the building can take place, and it has to always take place in a state of soul consciousness, so that the lower factors may be seen in that light. Well, the fifth ray type here is a good student, and is going to acquiesce readily to the demands of the soul. The worker then destroyed the objects of his previous toil, all those test tubes, all those retorts, all his frail appliances, his particular methods of seeking truth, because now he has intuitively fed soul light with which to seek the truth. He need not merely experiment in the quest for truth by working in the lower worlds with the instruments of the lower worlds. He now has some higher powers, some higher cities with which to work. He then destroyed the objects of his previous toil because they were just a preoccupation which kept him from the real higher knowledge. Remember, there is a higher part to the fifth ray, is there not? Sparing three treasures which he knew were good. Were these material treasures? I tend to think not. I tend to think of the ideas of the aspects of the mind. Three minds unite. There's different ways to look at that, but one of the ways is to say, okay, I have a mind, I can think. I have a sun of mind, I can see the relationship between all things. I have an abstract mind, I can see the great divine patterns, the blueprints of the plan, which are intuitively delivered. I will spare the mind and its aspects, because the light can shine upon them. He knew these treasures were good because the light could shine upon them, and he could always use them for further inquiries. It's not that he wants to dispense with the lower mind. It can be very useful in acquiring the details of whatever is studied. The son of mind can reveal the unity and relationship between all things. The abstract mind can reveal the great patterns in which the many particulars are subsumed. So he's sparing the mind, and he will use them now, these aspects of the mind, to good purpose. But he continues struggling. He is at that stage. Perhaps he has not yet passed the temptations in the desert, but he certainly knows the right direction to go. So he's struggling towards the soul and towards soul consciousness and towards the third initiation. He struggled towards the chamber of the king. He's become the true scientific disciple, the true well-informed aspirant. He knows the method now, and still he struggles. So this tells us of the condition that he is presently in. He has not yet achieved but at least he is detached from his previous pursuits. He knows there is a higher way, and he is following that higher way. He has established himself upon it, and there is a great certainty, at least a great probability, that he will succeed. Okay, that has taken a little longer than I thought, so as long as we have worked through that with fair care and meticulousness. See, we're going to see more and more of this. We're going to see the people who used to be curtailed by their scientific prejudices. We're going to see them entering into new worlds which transcend ordinary Newtonian scientific logic. We're already seeing it. Maybe even for 100 years, we have seen certain types of scientists astonished at what their experiments and reasoning were revealing. Something that seemed to contradict common sense. Something that even Einstein could not agree with. Was he the victim of his own prejudices when he said, God does not play dice with the world? In other words, he was looking at this idea of chance happenings, and he could not conceive within himself that it could be so. The uncertainty principle of Heisenberg, Einstein could not conceive that this could possibly be describing how things worked. Yet many other quantum physicists, persisting in their careful methods, conclude that it must be so. So the jury is still out on this. But let's say for 100 years, certain advanced minds have realized that there's so much more to the mysteries of matter energy than they may have suspected, and they're getting some very odd results. The idea that two separate particles, without touching, without being in relationship, can seemingly affect each other without any type of normal interaction. It's a Bell's theorem, something of this nature. My knowledge of these fifth-ray matters is sketchy, but I have read enough about it to realize that a certain strangeness in the constitution of matter-energy is being revealed, and we are being led by the advanced fifth-ray types, who DK says are the true occultists, into some astonishing revelations. And this, I think, is why the fifth-ray ashram, per se, had to be somewhat neutralized for a number of years, so that their discoveries did not entirely outstrip the moral development of humanity. So somewhere between 1950 and the year 2000, the fifth-ray ashram was, I don't want to say weakened, but it was not stimulated. It was unstimulated in a way. And the inquiries along the fifth-ray line are now taking place within the larger confines of the third-ray ashram, of which the fifth-ray ashram is a part. And this is to prevent premature discovery about the nature of matter energy, which could be used extremely destructively, far more destructively than is even possible now with atom and hydrogen bombs. So let's read this again, this time trying to get a synthetic sense of this developmental process, what is really going on here, and how the man moves from personal investigation into a higher type of soul-inspired investigation in cooperation with the higher forces and with intuition, all of those things with God, things which he had denied before, denying their reality. At last he accepts them, and his work will flourish because of that. The direction of Ray 5, deep in a pyramid on all sides, built around by stone. In the deep dark of that stupendous place, a mind and brain embodied in a man were working. Outside the pyramid, the world of God established itself. The sky was blue, the winds blew free, the trees and flowers opened themselves unto the sun. But in the pyramid, down in its dim laboratory, a worker stood, toiling at work. His test tubes and his frail appliances he used with skill. In rows, the retorts for fusing and for blending, for crystallizing and for that which sought division, stood with their flaming fires. The heat was great, the toil severe. Dim passages in steady progress led upward to the summit. I think he would never get there if he tried to just go step by step by step without that higher guiding light. Okay. Dim passages in steady progress led upward to the summit. There a wide window stood, open under the blue of heaven, and carrying one clear ray down to the worker in the depths. He worked and toiled. He struggled onwards towards his dream, the vision of an ultimate discovery. He sometimes found the thing he sought and sometimes failed, but never found that which could give to him the key to all the rest. In deep despair he cried aloud unto the God he had forgot, "Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key." Then silence reigned. Through the opening on the summit of the pyramid, dropped from the blue of heaven, a key came down. It landed at the feet of the discouraged worker. The key was of pure gold, the shaft of light. Upon the key a label, and writ in blue these words, "Destroy that which thou hast built, and build anew, but only build when thou hast climbed the upward way, traversed the gallery of tribulation, and entered into light within the chamber of the King. Build from the heights, and thus shew forth the value of the depths." The worker then destroyed the objects of his previous toil, sparing three treasures which he knew were good, and upon which the light could shine. He struggled towards the chamber of the King, and still he struggles. I begin to think that some of his research here will be done with the inner cities that are being revealed to him, and not only with the outer mechanisms. I'm thinking of how Leadbeater and Besant, both of whom I think had the fifth ray mind, worked in their scientific investigations, using the cities rather than the more cumbersome methods of the scientific laboratory with its frail appliances. A formula is needed. But before the higher formulas can be revealed, the old methods have to be destroyed, repulsed, you might say. And an entirely higher soul-centered perspective has to be achieved, so that the worker really works from those heights and not just down in the dim laboratory. In a way, it's as if he's working from the capstone of the pyramid. He's working high up in the mind, where the mind can be illumined by the blue of heaven and by the higher forms of light. And this is the major evolution in this law of repulse, from a method of working in the dark in a very individual way to a method of cooperating with the higher types of knowledge, the higher worlds, the higher agencies, like the soul or angel, in scientific pursuit. It is possible to cooperate with the higher beings as you pursue scientific revelation. Okay, then let us sound the great invocation together, and then we'll get on to Ray 6, which is really quite different, isn't it? Okay. Okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, Let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, we will move on then to the law of repulse, the direction of ray 6.